सोमज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. सो वेलकम वन्स अगेन टू अवर सैटरडे भगवद्गीता क्लास. एज यूजुअल सिंस वी आर डिस्कसिंग चैप्टर वन वी विल चैंट द वर्सेस ऑफ चैप्टर वन टुगेदर. So we have been discussing the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, observing the armies. This chapter, as we have discussed, serves as a prelude to the text. The real philosophy will actually begin from the second chapter onwards. But nevertheless, this background is also very important for us to understand. Otherwise, why would it be included in the Bhagavad Gita? So we have covered so far 26 verses, and briefly to recapitulate, Arjuna has requested Lord Krishna to pull the chariot in the middle of the armies. We have seen that Arjuna is an eternal associate of the Lord. He descends into this material world whenever the Lord descends, because the Lord's eternal associates always accompany the Lord wherever he goes. And therefore, Arjuna, being eternally liberated, can never fall under illusion. But in order to facilitate the speaking of Bhagavad Gita, he is actually... playing the role of coming under illusion. Because if he were not so, the Bhagavad Gita would never have been spoken. And Arjuna is actually now preparing the ground. He is requesting Arjuna that he wants to see everything from his vision, from his material vision. And Lord Krishna has taken Arjuna directly to the center of the battlefield, right in front of Bhishma, Drona and others. And having seen all his relatives assembled there, especially his venerable superiors, grandfathers like Somadatta, Bhishma, fathers, or like those in the category of the fathers like Bhurishrava, those in the category of uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, those in the categories of brothers like Duryodhan and others, those in the categories of friends like Ashwatthama, those in the categories of well-wishers like Kritavarma, those in the category of sons like Lakshman, who was Duryodhan's son. He sees all these family members assembled there, and particularly Bhishma and Drona. And when Arjuna requested Lord Krishna to take the chariot in the middle, Lord Krishna deliberately took the chariot right in front of Bhishma and Drona, the two main characters in the Kaurava army, who could be impediments in the path of Arjuna's and the Pandavas' victory. And having seen the two present there, Arjuna is now going to present for the first time the doubt about whether he should fight or not. So far we have seen in the Mahabharata, till this point, Arjun has never shown any kind of weakness of heart. He has always demonstrated great Kshatriya valor. And now for this time, he is going to begin actually displaying symptoms that will further facilitate the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. So having come to text 27, what happens? Let us follow the discussion as Sanjay is describing to Dhritarashtra. Kindly repeat after me as I repeat. Tan samiksha sakonteyah sarvan bandhun avasthitan kripaya paraya vishto Vishidannidam abravet. Tan Samiksha, after he had seen all of them, Kaunteya, the son of Kunti Arjuna, Sarvan Bandhun Avasthitan, he saw all these relatives, friends, etc. gathered there. Kripaya Parayavishto, he became overwhelmed by Kripa, compassion. Vishidan Idam Abravit, then he began lamenting, and then he spoke as follows. This verse has been translated by Srila Prabhupada as follows. When the son of Kunti Arjuna saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. Actually, on the battlefield, face to face with a warrior, there is no place for compassion. Because you are fighting. If you do not kill him, he will kill you. So therefore, Kshatriyas were always trained to never be fearful or indecisive in battle. They had to be trained to be accustomed to bloodshed. Therefore, they were allowed to hunt. So that in hunting or killing animals, not for their own sense gratification, not for some enjoyment or merrymaking, but for just hardening them, toughening them, so that on the battlefield they would not get frightened when they saw blood, or they would not hesitate to kill someone. And here is a great test for a Kshatriya, because he is seeing his relatives in the form of enemies. Such a great challenge for a Kshatriya. And therefore, the Kshatriyas, when they went through such experience or training of hunting, they became bold. They would not hesitate to kill. Just like if a person has to be trained to be a surgeon, then it is not easy. No gentleman will like to stick his knife in somebody's body, isn't it? So, even if the person is under anesthesia, still you hesitate. If any of us were asked to cut open somebody's body, you would still feel very awkward, even though you know the person is under anesthesia. So therefore they are trained by operating on dead bodies. So then they get practice, they get accustomed to it, and they become hardened a little bit. So in the same way, Kshatriyas were trained like this. So Arjuna was a trained Kshatriya, trained by none other than Dronacharya, the greatest military teacher of that time. So Arjuna was not a coward. Arjuna was all set to fight the battle. In fact, he was very eager to go ahead and fight. And as he went on, however, at this point, Arjuna's indication of weakness is first coming through. Now actually, as we study this first chapter, we will see later on that Arjuna, after giving various logical reasoning, refuses to fight. And his refusal will go on till the second chapter, and eventually Krishna will refute very expertly all the arguments that Arjuna has put forward, and he will induce Arjuna to fight. And eventually Arjuna will say, yes, I will do whatever you say. Sarvam etatritam manye yanmam vadasi Keshava. I have accepted everything you have told me as truth, my dear Arjuna, and I will do whatever you say. But it takes time for Arjuna to come to that platform. But till then, now he is beginning to doubt. So it is analyzed that there are five reasons that Arjuna is going to give for refusing to fight. The first reason is beginning now from the next verse. That is, text 28, 29 and 30. In which he will cite compassion as a reason. Because he feels compassion for his relatives, his loved ones, he does not fight. The second reason why Arjuna is going to refuse to fight is in text 31 to 35 of this chapter, where he says that how can I possibly enjoy a kingdom and all my opulence and wealth without my family members? Ultimately, if you had so much money and everything, but if you had nobody to enjoy it with and you are all alone, Would you like to enjoy? What would be the value of that money for you? No family members, no friends, no relatives, all alone, but with millions and millions of rupees. No value. So the second reason Arjuna is going to give, no doubt I will be victorious and the kingdom will be ours again. But in the course of that, what is the price I will have to pay? I will have to kill all my family members. And normally I would have enjoyed the kingdom with them. But now they will not be there, so with whom shall I enjoy? So what is the point in fighting? So that will be the second reason that he is going to give. Then text 36 to 38, he is going to give the third reason. Oh, this is such a great sin. We are going to kill respectable people like our gurus, like Drona, our grandfathers like Bhishma, our fathers like Bhurishrava, elders, venerable, worshipable personalities. This is indeed a great sin. In our culture, it is said that we must respect our elders. But here, I am going to kill them. So what a great sin it is. So he is going to give this reason. And then from text 49 to 43, the reason that he is going to give is basically that when the family tradition is destroyed, then everything becomes hellish. Because all the men are assembled on the battlefield, including the elders. It is the duty of the elders to preserve dharma and to inculcate the principles of dharma in the younger generation. In every generation, this is a fact. If those who are elders, they do not teach the younger generation about dharma, then how can dharma go ahead generation to generation? Just a few days ago, I met a very flourishing doctor, lady doctor, who was complaining that although she is now practically elderly, way past middle age, but when she wants to take some time off from her clinics in the evenings to attend Bhagavad Gita class, a 7-day class, her parents are stiffly opposing. They are saying that just stay at home, this is your Bhagavad Gita. There is no need to go to temple, there is no need to hear Bhagavad Gita lecture. Just look after your daughter, this is what Bhagavad Gita says. But this is a very sorry state of affairs in India today. The child is not a child now, a grown-up person, established, flourishing professional, earning lots of money, respectable position in society. But still, the older generation, instead of encouraging the younger generation in moving ahead in spiritual life, is actually stopping and giving so many reasons. And then the parents were saying, I know who has instilled all these ideas in your mind. It is the other doctor nearby. Stop him from coming to your clinic now. Change your doctor. Change the other consultant who will come. So this is our present day affair in Hindu society. The elders have no understanding of spiritual life. They have just some vague ritualistic conception of religion. Just when the festival comes, okay, just go do some activities, some formalities you do in the temple. Or maybe morning and evening, just go bow your head. Once a day, it's sufficient. So such very false and very harmful conceptions of religion they have. And they also, instead of bringing the younger generation on the path of spiritual life, they keep them away. So actually this is a great sin according to Shastra. According to Shastra, this is spiritual violence. It is the greatest form of violence. And one gets very severe reactions for these things. Just like when one performs violence on the body, on somebody else's body, one gets a sinful reaction. If one performs violence on someone's mind, by hurting someone emotionally very deeply, by speaking harsh words, then also it is a sinful action for which we will get a reaction. But what people do not know is that we perform spiritual violence by trying to take away somebody from the path of Krishna consciousness or the path of bhakti. It is very great violence. It is the greatest violence. And here, many times you see, it is the elder generation that actually does the spiritual violence. Such a paradoxical thing. Normally, it should be the elders who preserve dharma. So in any case, Arjuna says that all the elders and all the male members are here on the battlefield. And surely this battle is going to see the destruction of everyone on both sides. And when the elders are not there anymore, who will preserve dharma? So the families will become irreligious. When the families become irreligious, the women will have nobody to protect them. And therefore they will be exploited by unscrupulous men who are always there in the society, who have no scruples, no morals, who only desire sense gratification in life. And when they exploit the women who are unprotected, then there will be unwanted children, Varna Sankara. And these unwanted children will not be of good consciousness because the procreation has not taken place in good consciousness. And therefore they will become like little Rakshasas. We have so many millions and millions of Rakshasas in the world today, taking birth every day. And then they will create a hellish condition in the society, and all religious activities will be stopped, and those who are killers of the family tradition and those who are killed, that is those who don't have any spiritual culture, all will go to hell. So Arjuna is thinking now. Arjuna is very intelligent. So see all the reasons he is giving. Very, from a Shastric point of view, because Arjuna was a Pandit, he was a scholar. So our political leaders should also be very, very aware of the Shastras. They should reason from the point of view of the scriptures, not from their selfish interest. And then lastly, Arjuna's reason for not fighting would be indecision. To fight is better, not fight is better, which one will be better, what is to be done, he's not sure. So these are the five reasons why Arjuna will be refusing to fight. So let us see, starting from text 28 and up to 30 will be the first reason that Arjuna is going to offer. And that is, he is feeling compassion. And because of compassion, extreme compassion for his loved ones, whom he is about to kill, certain things start happening to Arjuna. So what are those things that start happening to Arjuna? Let us hear. Kindly repeat after me. Text 28.
Arjuna uvacha drishtve mam svajanam Krishna yuyutsum samupasthitam sidanti mama gatrani. Mukham cha parishushyati.
Translation. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. So here is Arjuna's first exhibition of weakness. And what kind of weakness? Sidanti mama gatrani. My limbs are all quivering, trembling. And second, mukham cha parishushyati. My mouth is all dried up. Imagine Arjuna's predicament. He is there. He loves Bhishma, who has looked after him from childhood and brought him up. He loves Drona, who has taught him everything he knows about fighting. He knows so many of the people assembled there who have looked after him, given him so much love and affection. Of course, there were also others like Duryodhan who were envious of him and who tried to kill him. But there were also so many whom he loved and who loved him. And now Arjuna is faced with the prospect of killing these people for whom he had such intense affection. It is, as it is difficult to kill, but still a Kshatriya can manage when he hates someone. But when he loves someone, and out of duty he is supposed to fight and kill that person, on the battlefield, you can imagine, it is not an ordinary thing. So difficult. So therefore, Arjun is going to demonstrate these symptoms. And he says, Sidanti mama gatrani, I am trembling, I am quivering and my mouth is dried up. I cannot speak anything. So Arjuna was well trained by Dronacharya as a Kshatriya. Why should he be experiencing all these symptoms? Was he becoming a coward? Certainly not. Arjuna was a brave warrior. He was not experiencing any feeling of fear on his own accord. He was not a coward. Then what is the reason for these symptoms of weakness appearing within Arjuna? The reason is mentioned here in the first line. Drishtva imam svajanam Krishna. Drishtva imam svajanam. He is seeing his svajana. Svajana means own men. Svajana. Jana means people. Sva means self. So he is telling Krishna, see, these are my svajana. These are my own people. Not some strangers who have invaded my kingdom and who have done great treacheries to me. Bhishma, Drona, etc. My own people, svajana. My family members. And now these family members, yuyutsum samupasthitam, they are here in front of me in such a fighting spirit. My dear grandfather Bhishma wants to kill me. My guru Drona wants to kill me. Now the realization is dawning upon Arjuna. It is so far he was so possessed of the feeling of anger against the Kauravas that he did not think about the point that he will be fighting such people as Bhishma also. So far he was only thinking, yes, I will kill Dushasan, I will kill Karna, I will kill Duryodhan and all his brothers and all the evil ones who have helped them in their treachery against us. But the thought had not sunk in so deeply that he will also have to fight and kill people like Bhishma, Drona. Now that he has come in front and actually he is seeing them face to face and they are here in such a fighting mood, then he feels that compassion welling up, that family affection, that desire that he has to kill them. And then his body is trembling and his mouth is drying up, he is not able to speak. So what is the cause? The cause is svajana. Svajana means, I think, some people are my family members and some people are not. Why should we think like this? This is called a bodily conception of life. When someone has no understanding of the Atma, has no understanding of the soul, he thinks in terms of the body. Anything connected to the body is svajana. This is my svajana because he is my child, my uncle, my brother, my father, my wife. Everything connected to this body is svajana. And that which is not svajana. But this conception comes from the bodily conception of life. In a spiritual conception of life, one becomes broad-minded. Ayam veti paro veti ganana lagu chetasam udara charitanam tu vai vasudhaiva kutumbakam. You have heard this phrase very often, vasudhaiva kutumbakam. What does it mean? It means that one considers the whole universe as one's family. One doesn't consider, this is my family only, my wife, my husband, my children, my parents, my friends, my social circle. No. Vasudha. Vasudha means the earth. So the whole earth, all the living beings here are my family members. Ayam nija paro veti. But one who thinks, ayam nija, this is mine. Ayam, this is nija, mine. Paro veti, that is not mine. This is my brother, my family member, my swajana. But that person, no, he's not my swajana. So I will not work for his welfare. So this is laghu chetasam. Ayam nija paro veti laghu chetasam. Ganana. So one is calculating like this. This is called laghu chetasam, which means narrow-mindedness. Bodily conception. But udara charitana, when one becomes broad-hearted, one develops a spiritual conception that all living beings are children of Lord Krishna. This is all one family. So all are my svajana. Not that some are my svajana and some are not. Because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtayah sambhavantiyah tasam brahma mahat yonir
aham bija pradastita.
He says, my dear Arjuna, I am the seed-giving father, bija pradata, of all the yonis, all the species of life, sarva yonishu kaunteya, murtaya, sambhavantiya. So all the species, 84 lakh species, be they the cockroaches or the insects, or the alligators and monkeys and donkeys and camels and humans, lions, tigers, all are my children. So therefore, one who has developed spiritual vision, he sees all living beings as family members. Vidya vine sampanne brahmane kavi hastini shuni chaiva shvapake cha panditah samadarshina. So pandit, a real learned person, is one who has developed this large heart, broad vision. Samadarshinaha, he sees everybody equally. Not that he works only for the welfare of his family and doesn't care about the others, no. So when we come in contact with the material body and develop bodily consciousness, we forget that we are the Atma, we develop this narrow-mindedness. Narrow-mindedness automatically comes because of identifying with the body. So Krishna consciousness means broad-mindedness, udara charitana. And bodily consciousness means lagu chetasa, narrow-mindedness, selfishness. So even this selfishness expands bit by bit by bit. A child, for example, you would have noticed, is very selfish. Doesn't care about anybody's interest. It only wants its own interest. If it doesn't get, it will cry, it will do anything. But it will get what it wants. It doesn't care if in the process of getting that, somebody else is getting disturbed. It doesn't have that advancement of consciousness to understand this thing. That I want something, and because of this, my mother has to stay awake all night. He doesn't have that intelligence. So his consciousness is very small. But as he grows up, his consciousness begins to broaden. Ah, yes, now I should not give my parents trouble. I should study on my own. I should not wait for them to come and tell me all the time, study, study, study. I should study, I should do my own little thing better. I should care for them slowly. Then he starts having friends. Then he starts thinking in terms of friends and all others around. And then gradually as he becomes into his teens and grows up, he starts thinking in terms of society, country, eventually nation and other internationally. So his consciousness expands with age. But because of want of spiritual knowledge, even this expansion of consciousness is related to the body only. They are my friends, my society, my country, my species, only human species. Why only my species? Are the cats and dogs and cows and others not entitled to my loving feelings? Is only humanity entitled to my good feelings? So because he's in bodily consciousness, his expansion of consciousness also is connected to the body. But he doesn't understand that actually by putting so much emphasis on this svajana, he's only creating suffering for himself. Bodily conception of life means that we try to arrange our life around this material body. But this material body itself is temporary. And when all our relationships are based on this temporary body, which is temporary, these relationships are also going to be temporary, and therefore they will give us suffering. Is there any relationship based on this body which is always a cause of happiness? Nothing. But there is one relationship that is eternal, and that is a cause of great happiness. And that is our eternal relationship with Lord Krishna. Mamaivansho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Because we are sanatana, or eternal parts and parcels of Lord Krishna. So the moment Arjuna thought in terms of his own vision, he became bewildered. So long as he was with Krishna and he was hearing whatever Krishna was saying, Arjuna was happy. And till this point in the Mahabharata, Arjuna's vision has not gone. It has remained. Because he was always following the guidance of Lord Krishna. But The moment Arjuna started thinking, let me analyze with my own intelligence. Let me see with my own vision. Krishna, please take the chariot in the middle and let me assess for myself. Let me make my own analysis of the situation. When we try to understand things by our own intelligence, without reference to the scriptures, without reference to higher spiritual guidance, we become bewildered. One needs Divya Chakshu. One needs spiritual understanding to understand the higher things in life. One needs help, spiritual help. But Krishna, or Arjuna was thinking, oh, let me go and make my own analysis. So the moment Arjuna made that analysis, he started making, he looked, immediately he was bewildered. So just see. So long as we are with the devotees in spiritual consciousness, everything will be okay. But the moment we give up Bhagavad Gita, we give up the association of devotees and start seeing things from our own material point of view, immediately our bewilderment will start. Our confusion will start. Just like it started for Arjuna. So far was so good. But now, because he is calculating from material terms, he is calculating on the basis of this body. Oh, these are Swajana. Therefore, he is coming under difficulty. This bodily attachment of family members is the greatest hindrance in the way of understanding spiritual consciousness. Because the family affection and affection of relatives, friends, society drains all our propensity for affection there. And therefore there is no affection, scope left for affection for Krishna. So what is Bhagavad Gita teaching? Bhagavad Gita is teaching transferring our affection to Krishna. Transferal of all affection, whatever spirit of affection you have, whatever capacity to love that you have, repose that in Krishna. In Mahabharata itself, Bhishma, much later, he will instruct Yudhishthira. And in the course of that, he has defined what is bhakti. It also comes in Narada Bhakti Sutra. Bhishma has defined bhakti as reposing all one's affection in one person only. And that one person is God. So the question may be asked, then should I not love my family members? Should I not serve them? You are saying only love Krishna? Then what will happen to this world? So for those who are keen to love and serve their family members, we should know the real service takes place on the spiritual platform. This is real service. That is not to say that service on the platform of the body is not to be done. No, that is also required so long as the body is there. But real service begins on the spiritual platform. Till you have served your family members on the spiritual platform, really speaking, you have not served them at all. What does this mean? It means that till you have actually inspired them to come on the path of Krishna consciousness, to take shelter of Lord Krishna, till then you have not performed your duty towards your family members and your relatives and so on. And this instruction is also given by Rishabhdev Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he gives so many wonderful instructions. Guru na tasyat, pajano na tasyat, daivam na tasyana, janani na tasyan, pita na tasyana, pati sa tasyan, na mochiyeti ha samuteyeta mrityum. Rishabhdev Maharaj says, to whom? To his own sons. He's instructing his 100 sons. And he's telling them that, my dear boys, please remember this very important point that I'm telling you. No one should become a father, a husband, a parent, a mother, a guru, a devata, or anyone of responsibility unless he or she is able to deliver those who are dependent on him or her from the cycle of birth and death. So every human being who wants to serve his or her family members and love them should ask himself or herself this question. That is my service purely on the bodily platform? Or am I also doing something on the spiritual platform? Am I helping my family members in their spiritual advancement?
This is real service. Otherwise, our service is zero. Why is it zero? Because it will perish with the body. And then in the next life, we forget who are the family members we served in the previous life, in the life before that, and the life before that. We have had millions and millions of lives. And in each life, we have served so many family members. Where are they now? And what has happened to all our service that we have done for them so sincerely? You know the story of this wealthy man who only for his son's sake and his family's sake worked very hard, accumulated a lot of money and built very big house and so many things. He was so busy that he did not have time to even enjoy his money. And finally, he died, and in the next life he took birth in a cobbler's family just across the road from his own palatial building. And then somehow he was reminded of his previous life by the Lord from within his heart. And when he grew up to an age where he could begin talking just as a small child, one day he was always waiting outside the gate, hoping that his children and previous life's family members would recognize him. Naturally they could not. And so one time when his son from previous life was about to enter into his very nice chauffeur driven car, and this child urchin with dirty clothes, he came up and he told him, "Don't you remember me?" "So what do you mean?" "Yes, I'm your father from previous life." Now if anybody came to you speaking like this, would you take him seriously? Now it was a fact, but obviously this young man did not take him seriously. So the story goes that they beat him with slippers and sent him out. So the moral of the story, Prabhupada explained, is that the very people for whom we do so much service, those very people are beating us with a shoe in the next life simply because they don't remember who we are, what we have done. This is the value of service purely on the bodily platform. So this doesn't mean that we shouldn't look after our children and our spouse and so on. But the point is that we have to give spiritual consciousness to them. We have to create a spiritual environment in our home and not let our consciousness be absorbed simply in bodily affection. "Oh, this is my wife, my husband, therefore I should serve." No. My wife, my husband is there, but ultimately this is Krishna's property. My wife is Krishna's property. My husband is Lord Krishna's property. My children are also Lord Krishna's property. And I have been entrusted with the responsibility of doing this particular service in this capacity. And therefore we are doing. But my real service is to see that this person, who is my husband, wife, child, parent, has learned how to transfer the affection to Krishna. Otherwise, these things will go on. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that just as in a flowing river, sometimes twigs and straw pieces and grass, etc., flows, and certain twigs come together in one group, and then they disperse with the waves, and then again another group of twigs is formed, and again they disperse, never to meet again. Similarly, different souls, different atmas, they come together at a particular point in time according to the karma of these atmas from the previous lives. They come together as family members, as friends, even as enemies. In fact, many times the enemies of previous life come together as husband and wife, as brother and brother. This is a fact. Bhagavatam states this. Many times you see bitter quarreling amongst family members. We see this happening many times. And particularly sometimes husband and wife also. Why does this happen? We should understand that they have come together as husband and wife to settle previous karmic equations coming from previous lives. Some account was to be settled. So they are there to take revenge on each other from previous lives. So therefore, in this life, our family ties and affection, we should remember we are here only for one life. We don't know what our previous relationships were. We don't know what will be our future relationships. We have come like the twigs in the river, coming and going, coming and going. So occasionally, when we are overwhelmed with our sentimentality for our family members, not that we shouldn't love them, but we should also think from spiritual point of view, oh, they are Krishna's, they are not mine. And I should look after them very carefully because they are Krishna's and the responsibility is given to me. I should make them love Krishna. Then I will truly be able to love them. So this is the point that is taught in Bhagavad Gita, that if you do bhakti, if you love Lord Krishna, automatically you will love everyone else. Then everybody will become your swajana. But if you don't love Lord Krishna, even your swajana tomorrow will no longer remain swajana. And even in this lifetime, many times we see it happening everywhere in the society, those who are our own swajana disown us. And there are fights, and they no longer remain swajana. They consider themselves enemies. In fact, many times we see that the bitterest enemies are those who are many times close family relatives earlier. Many times we see this happening. But when we love Krishna, make him the central point of our affection, then automatically we truly love everyone. So if you really want to love your family members, if you really want to love your swajana, then love Krishna. Then you will be able to truly love them and serve them both on the spiritual platform and on the material platform. But here, Arjuna is playing the role of a person who has been infected by bodily consciousness. He has been affected by this my-manship, my-manism, our men. Oh, they are our men, how can I kill them? He doesn't seem to remember or reflect that this is Krishna's order. Krishna is going to order me to kill. That is more important than anything else. But however, we should also remember that if Arjuna didn't submit himself to the situation, Bhagavad Gita would never be spoken. And we would never be enlightened. So this is all the pastime that is going on. And what more is happening to Arjuna? Let us see text 29. Kindly repeat after me.
Vepatuscha sharire me Roma harshascha jayate Gandivam sransate hastat Vakchaiva paridasyate.
Translation: my whole body is trembling, my hair is standing on end, my bow Gandiv is slipping from my hand, and my skin is burning. So let us put ourselves in Arjuna's position for a moment. Imagine if you were asked to kill your family members now, and you are being instructed, and it is your duty. Suppose it was your duty to do it, what would you feel? What would be the emotions going on in your mind? So, it is not surprising because Arjuna is playing the part of an ordinary conditioned soul. An ordinary being of this world who is subjected to the illusion of family affection and bodily relationship. So in this role, Arjuna is saying, Vepathuscha sharire me. My body is trembling, Roma harshascha jayate, my hair is standing on end. Gandivam sransate hastat, my Gandiva bow, which I used to hold so firmly and twang to put the fear of God into the lives of the other warriors, that very Gandiva bow is slipping from my hands and I'm not able to hold it firmly. Tvakchaiva paritahyate, and my skin also is burning. It appears like as if I have a fever. This all is happening only in a few moments' time. As Arjuna has asked Krishna to draw the chariot, and then the realization dawns upon Arjuna, I have to kill Bhishma, I have to kill Drona, I have to kill Kripacharya, I have to kill Kritavarma. These are my well-wishers from childhood. And then Arjuna is demonstrating and exhibiting
all these symptoms. Now, the symptoms that are mentioned here, they take place in material consciousness and also in spiritual consciousness. In material consciousness, we see that such symptoms also take place. There are many reserve energies in the body of which we are not even aware. Actually, physically, we are all stronger than we can imagine. Mentally, we have much more capacity than we can imagine. Intellectually, we are more intelligent than we imagine. It is only in certain situations that somehow the body calls upon these reserves of energies and draws upon them. For example, in times of anger, in times of fear, in times of madness, then these reserve energies are drawn up and one becomes exceptionally powerful. Therefore, when somebody is angry, very angry and violent, you cannot control. Where does that person get that energy from? You think, oh, such a weak person. But in that condition, somehow these reserves of energy, they come out. Similarly, intellectually also, mentally also, you can do wonderful things under certain situations. So therefore, Arjuna's condition here is on the material platform, out of fear for his relatives, his loved ones, because he knows that they are going to die. He knows that Krishna is with me, therefore they are going to die. Victory is going to be mine, that he is sure. But he is fearful for them. And therefore, he is acting like an ordinary man, and all the symptoms of ordinary material fear and anxiety are there in him. Just like a student in the exam paper opens and sees he doesn't know anything. Whatever is learnt, forgotten. Immediately mouth becomes dry and pen is, you can't hold the pen, anxiety. So like that, so many things happen. So in material fear, many, many of these symptoms may happen. But higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. Higher than the intelligence is the ego. Higher than the ego is the soul. So the soul also can have such symptoms. On the spiritual platform, when one becomes a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, then also one starts developing all these symptoms. They are called Ashta Sattvika Vikar, the eight kinds of transformations that take place in the body because of intense love for God. Therefore, you hear of great devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Tukaram. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is directly Krishna, but he is playing the role of a devotee. So therefore, they act in the role of as devotees, they many times exhibit many, many wonderful symptoms. They may be crying all day, so sometimes suddenly they start laughing, sometimes suddenly they will start talking rubbish. So from the modern or from the ordinary point of view, it looks as if they are mad. So ordinary people have always thought the great devotees to be mad. If you study history, you will always see great devotees have always been misunderstood and they have been persecuted by devotees, by the public at large. This has always been the case because they do not understand. They do not understand what these people are going through. Vaishnavera kriya mudra vigneha na bujhaye. Chaitanya Charitamrita Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that an advanced devotee's actions and his words you can never understand. Evam vratasva priya nama kirtya jatanurago trutachutta uttayihi hasatyato rodati roti gayati unmadavan vityati lokabahyaha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the symptoms manifested by a great advanced devotee of the Lord are mentioned. First of all, etam svapriya nama kirtya, when this great devotee, he is involved in the kirtan of the Lord whom he loves so much, jata anurago, with great attachment, with great devotion to the Lord, is chanting or remembering the Lord, druta chitta uchchaihi, then his heart melts with affection. And then what does he do? Hasati. Starts laughing suddenly. Prahlad used to do that. If you read 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will read very wonderful description of how Prahlad was as a child. And this description in the Bhagavatam 11th canto exactly describes these things. Hasati, suddenly he will laugh. Rodati, suddenly cry. And suddenly he will start dancing for no reason. He's sitting quietly, peacefully, suddenly dancing. Why he is doing this? Nobody understands. Unmadvan rityati. Unmad. Matta means intoxicated or mad. Unmad means very much so. Unmadvan rityati loka bahyaha. Not paying regard to the people outside, whether they think I'm crazy or not crazy. Not concerned. Doesn't care about what people say. In general, people are very concerned what are other people going to say. And when we first come to the temple, many people will criticize us. They will taunt us, they will make fun of us, make comments about us. Oh, you are also becoming a sannyasi. Oh, you are also going there to dance like a madman, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. So then we feel a little awkward. And maybe we feel a little embarrassed to go. And we will do a little hiding, we will come here. But gradually as our faith increases, then we say, we don't care for them. Let them say anything. Loka bahya, we are not concerned with them. Then when our faith becomes strong, we become indifferent. So therefore Prahlad, Shukadev Goswami explains, would do exactly like this. As a small child, he would sit down, suddenly tears would flow from his eyes. When he would remember, suddenly he would experience the hand of the Lord on his head. He would feel it, although nobody could see it. And he would understand that the Lord is putting his head on his a hand on his head. And when he would feel this spiritual touch, immediately he would experience spiritual ecstasy. And the tears would flow from his eyes, his hairs would stand on end, suddenly he would start trembling, his throat would get choked up, he would not be able to speak. So in this way, the symptoms of ecstasy that come on the spiritual platform are also found. But the symptoms here that are being described are out of material affection, not out of spiritual affection. So we should always distinguish between these two. There are many schools of bhakti or so-called bhakti, especially in Vrindavan, called the Sahajiya schools, who from the very first day that you come to their satsang will make you cry. And one time our devotee went there, he was surprised. This is a program taking place in Bombay, in a city like Bombay. And there were some 200, 300 people. And as he entered, he was surprised. Everybody is crying. What is going on here? Whole crowd, everybody is being taught how to cry. So Srila Prabhupada said, crying for Krishna is not so cheap. Therefore it is called Sahajiya. Sahajiya means to make everything very cheap. And he said, such tears, they wash away all the Vedic conclusions. Because these are tears that are based on mundane sentimentality, based on the bodily platform, based on bodily sentiment. Some people are by nature sentimental. Anything, little thing happens, they cry. But spiritual tears are not like that. So we must distinguish between material tears born out of mundane sentimentality and genuine spiritual tears that are born out of real bhakti. The two are different. So therefore, in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu many times exhibited these symptoms of bhakti, but when it came to the public, immediately he controlled himself. He never demonstrated. He never made it a show business. It was not to be done in the public. It was something that he relished privately within himself and amongst his intimate circle of very advanced devotees. Not even amongst those who were devotees but who were very new, neophyte, no. He would relish these deep feelings about Lord Krishna's devotion in privacy. So therefore, we must also distinguish. We must be very philosophical in our approach to bhakti. Bhakti is the path of sentiment. But those who do not understand what bhakti really is, they think that this is for sentimentalists. For those who are not intelligent to follow Gyan Marg, or those who are not strong enough to follow Yoga Marg to do tapasya, they will come for bhakti. One gentleman, he said, well, the bhakti marg you're doing is fine, but it is actually for women and children. I said, who has given you this conception? Where have you heard like this? From which scripture you are saying like this? The people say anything they like. There is no basis in Shastra. They don't understand what is bhakti. Bhakti is on a spiritual platform. It is not on the bodily platform. Although we render bhakti through the medium of the body, but it is a spiritual activity. So therefore, in our rendering of bhakti, we should be very philosophical to understand the spiritual truths based upon which we are rendering service to Krishna. And then at the proper time, by Lord Krishna's will, by His grace, we may come to that exalted stage in this life, maybe next life, maybe five lifetimes later, when He will bless us with that same ecstasy that Prahlad experienced, that other great devotees experienced. So we should hanker for that, but with patience. Then we will be able to realize the ultimate nectar of bhakti. Why people of great devotion in earlier times, they acted in this way? It is only then that we will really understand. Real happiness will be ours only at that time. So Arjuna is acting like a person who is not in spiritual consciousness, who is in bodily consciousness. Therefore, he tends to feel all this compassion, bodily compassion. And therefore, this is the first reason that he is stating that he doesn't want to fight. So from next time onwards, Krishna Arjuna is going to present his other four reasons. We have just concluded the first reason, because out of compassion, feeling affection for his loved ones, he was thinking, I should not fight. First reason he has given, and next time we will see the second, third and the fourth reasons. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions that you would like to ask? You are referring to the example I gave about the child and expanding consciousness. The question is, where does the consciousness come from and how does it expand? The source of the consciousness is the Atma, the soul. Avinashi tat buddhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartum arhasi. Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that this chetana or consciousness, which is a distinguishing factor between a dead body and a living body, this consciousness is imperishable. It is indestructible. And the source of this consciousness is the Atma, which is a spiritual spark. It has nothing to do with the body. But this consciousness is manifesting through the medium of the body. And according to the development of the body, the consciousness manifests differently. Like when we are in a child's body, we behave in one way. When we are in an adult's body, we behave in another way. When we are in an old body, we behave in yet another way. So that same consciousness, manifesting through the means of medium of the body, manifests differently according to the condition of the body. So as a child's body is growing, the brain is developing, in other parts of the child's faculties are developing, his material consciousness is expanding because the body is growing and changing. But that expansion of consciousness is on the material platform, it is on the level of the body. But Bhagavad Gita is teaching us to develop spiritual consciousness. So with spiritual consciousness, as we mentioned, we consider that everything is Lord Krishna's creation. And everybody is our swajana. It is not that some people are our family members and some people are not. This is spiritual consciousness. So if the bodily condition is such that it does not allow that consciousness to manifest in an advanced fashion, it will restrict. Because in a person who is mentally retarded, there may be some malfunctioning in the brain, or some other part because of which that consciousness cannot manifest to its fullest extent. Just like there is a bulb, you cover the bulb with different layers of colored paper. The bulb's shining doesn't change. The bulb's illumination power remains. But it is allowed to manifest according to the kind of covers that you are putting or taking out from that bulb. So similarly, the consciousness of the soul is always the same. But depending on the covering of the body and what is the nature of that covering, it will manifest through the body in different ways. If the brain is not functioning properly, then we say the person is insane, is mad. Or if a person has a very good brain, we say he's very intelligent. But actually, these are qualities of the body. The qualities of the soul are quite different. So we have to learn spiritual qualities. Yes. Does the consciousness perish with the body?
No.
Avinashi tu tat viddhi. The very first word Krishna uses in describing the consciousness is that it is avinashi. It is not perishable. Yena sarvam idam tatam. And it is pervading throughout the body. From the tip of the toe to the skull, this consciousness is everywhere. Vinasham avyayasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. And when this body is destroyed, my dear Arjuna, this consciousness is not destroyed. Consciousness through the medium of the body can only change its form. But consciousness never changes. It is eternal, because it is the eternal quality of the soul. We will see more about this when we come to second chapter, when Lord Krishna actually starts describing the qualities of the soul. So far, Lord Krishna has not even begun teaching. Only Arjuna's condition is being expressed here. Right? And when Krishna starts in second chapter, then the real philosophy will start. What is the difference between prana and consciousness? Prana are certain subtle airs which are within the body. They are subtle forms of air, not the air that we breathe. The air that we breathe, which goes into our lungs, is gross air. But there is a subtler form of that air which is called prana. There are different kinds of prana vayu which are circulating within the body, and medically they are responsible for different parts of functioning of the body. From Ayurveda also we understand that there is a certain vayu which is responsible for the digestive function, a certain vayu responsible for all other functions, the urinary genital function, another vayu for the respiratory function. The different airs, these prana vayus within the body, like samana, vayana, udana, prana, like that, they take charge of different functions within the body. There are 5 main pranas and 5 upapranas, totally 10 prana vayus. And they have their functions within the body. Our modern medical science doesn't know about these subtle vayus, but they are there. And according to Ayurveda, illness is caused because of an imbalance of these vayus. And therefore the yogis, when they practice yogasanas, pranayama, etc., that is to adjust the vayus inside. Because of an imbalance inside, illness comes in. The germs are always there. So why does one fall ill? The illness, according to Ayurveda and our shastras, is not because of germs. Because the germs are already existing. The illnesses take place because of imbalances inside us. In the normal healthy condition where everything is balanced, even if the germs are there, you will not fall sick. But because of unnatural living or taking to bad habits and so on, the balance is disturbed. Therefore, you fall prey to various illnesses. So the pranavayu is a material element. But pure consciousness is spiritual. It comes from the Atma. And then it manifests through the medium of the body. It may appear to be material, but actually, originally, it is spiritual. Whereas prana is material. It leaves along with at the point of death, it takes the soul along with it. In the Upanishads, it is described that at the point of death, It is like the pran takes the soul and leaves like a creaking chariot. Have you pulled along some cart that is creaking, making all kinds of noises when it is not lubricated? How? In the same way, in the old age, the atma is forced to leave the body and the prana vayu is the vehicle that takes it away. The prana goes on. Therefore, King Kulashekhar has prayed, Krishna tvadiya pada pankaja panjarantam adhyaiva vishatu me manasa raja hansah prana prayana samaye kafavata pittaihi kanthavarodhana vidhau smaranam kutaste. He says, my dear Lord Krishna, please immediately take me away from this body because I am in good health now and therefore I have some capacity to think about you. But at the time of death, prana prayana samaye, when it is time for the prana to leave the body, taking the soul with it, what will happen at that time? Kafavata pittaihi kantha avarodhana. The kafavata pitta, the mucus, bile, everything will accumulate in the throat and I will never be able to call out your name helplessly. My faculties, my senses will cease functioning. My intelligence will be destroyed. Smaranam kutaste, how will I be able to think of you at that time? So in this way we see that the prana forcefully is pulled out of the body and then the body remains there, the gross body, it is eventually destroyed. But the consciousness can never be destroyed. It remains. We will continue any other questions if there are after the darshan, because it is time now for darshan. So let us absorb our consciousness as Lord Kulashekhar wanted to in this prayer and when we take darshan of Lord Krishna. So please wait for the kirtan. After kirtan we will have prasadam. Like the darshan. Are there any questions remaining? Yes. Does consciousness influence the way of thinking? Certainly. Yes. Even spiritual consciousness. Consciousness is the original pure state of the Atma. And when that consciousness is corrupted or contaminated by touch with matter, it becomes perverted or polluted consciousness. Just like raw water, when it comes from the rain, is originally pure. But when it comes in contact with the pollution, or in contact with the mud on the ground, it becomes polluted. The nature of the water is to be pure originally. Similarly, original consciousness is always pure because the Atma is always pure. But when that consciousness becomes reflected through a material body and when it is used in a direction that is averse to service to God, then it is a misuse, it is perverted consciousness. So then one in bad consciousness thinks differently. So a person who is in bodily consciousness, he may think, I am a very big person, I am minister, I am president, I am king, I am this, I am that. So this is wrong. It is false. It is because of a material state of consciousness that he is dreaming these things. The consciousness is there. Even when a person is on the operating table and is under anesthesia, still the consciousness is there, but it is not manifesting. Just like in sleep. When we are in deep sleep, consciousness is within the body. If it wasn't, how would the person wake up again? Isn't it? If the consciousness was not there in the body at all, he would never wake up from his sleep. He would die. So consciousness is always there. But it is manifested through the body according to its different conditions. Thinking takes place through the brain. Actually, the thinking takes place because of the soul. But when the soul is identifying itself with the body, it uses the brain as a medium. Just like a computer operator is using the computer. He is perfectly sane, perfectly normal. But if there is something wrong with the hardware of the computer, then the output will be garbled. There will be some
something coming out, which doesn't make sense. But if he is also okay, and the computer is also all right, then what comes out will be perfect. So similarly, the soul is perfect, but if there is some derangement in the brain, then the soul is not able to manifest its pure consciousness through the medium of that deranged brain. So the brain is like the hardware, and the soul is like the person who is operating that whole system, that machine. Is that all right? When consciousness leaves the body, can it think? Of course, definitely. Because the consciousness is resting with the soul, and the soul never dies. So the soul will always remain thinking, and it will impart this quality of thinking to the next body that it occupies in its next birth. The soul imparts its quality to whatever body it goes to. Nature to be narrow-minded is next question. One's nature to be narrow-minded is so strong that even in spiritual mind we want only our husband or children to be great devotees. We don't care so much for other children. Is it correct? How to get rid of this thinking? Obviously, this is also an extension of the narrow-minded mentality. Why only our children? Why not other people's children? Are they also not children of Krishna? So we should desire the spiritual benefit of not only our children, but of the whole world. That is udara charitanam. That is the meaning of large-heartedness. Not that we want only for our family. Family is there today, gone tomorrow. When we die, everything is finished. So therefore, one should develop the spiritual consciousness that sees everything as God's property and sees all living beings as parts and parcels of the Lord and all living beings as brothers and sisters, part of the same family of Lord Krishna. And that is the consciousness we must try to develop. Awakening of Kundalini Shakti through the spinal column and the chakras, it is a spiritual process or a biological process? It is a psychophysiological process. It is essentially a biological process, but on a subtle platform. Just like we have the gross body, we also have a subtle body. Of course, this is a big subject we can't discuss today. And just like we have vehicles or vessels to carry the blood and other things, we also have vessels that carry the prana. We discussed this prana vayu in answer to a previous question. So the prana also flows, not randomly, arbitrarily. It flows in certain channels, and those channels are called nadis. So a good Ayurvedic doctor, he will never ask you what is your disease. If he asks you, then you understand he is not a very good doctor, the Ayurvedic doctor, because they just feel your nadi. And by sensing the imbalance in your nadi, immediately they are able to diagnose what is your problem. In fact, our shastras describe that in the early days, they were so powerful because the doctors were rishis in those days. So as soon as a person stepped into the room, he would diagnose what is his disease. And diagnosis is done even before he has actually examined the patient, just by seeing him as he comes in, just by seeing the symptoms on him bodily. And if not, just by seeing the nadi. So the prana is communicated and it flows along. And there are 72,000 nadis in the body. And the main one flows along the spine. There are three main nadis. And at certain main points along these three main nadis, called Ida, Sushumna, Pingala, there are six or seven main points where certain psychological energy is concentrated. And these are called chakras. So normally, a person who is in bodily consciousness, his or her energy is stored only at the lowest point. But a person who is refined spiritually, his consciousness is at a higher level. So Kundalini aims at lifting up this Shakti and bringing it up. But it is still a psychological energy. It is not a spiritual energy. It is a bodily energy, although it is on the subtle platform. And it is not advisable to do this at all, because the Shakti is so powerful, the coiled up Shakti, Kundalini is like a snake, coiled up at the base of the vertebra, of the vertebral column. And it is so powerful, you are unleashing a typhoon, a powerful, like a strong power. And if you don't know how to control it as it is released, there are people who go mad also, because the Shakti goes out of control. But in any case, even if somebody does it right, it is only the beginning of spirituality. And it is a long cut to spirituality. The shortcut to spirituality is to come directly on the spiritual platform by devotional service. So one need not go through this entire long process of Kundalini, Jagran, etc. Not only is it dangerous, but it is also a very long time-consuming process. So for this age especially, Kali Yuga, the path of bhakti, consisting of hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord and His holy names, is a recommended process. And one need not worry about other processes for spiritual awakening. Alright? So thank you very much for your kind attention. And please take prasadam before you go. And as usual, next Saturday we will continue with our discussion of chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. Tomorrow in the Sunday afternoon program, as usual, as you know, we have Sunday feast every Sunday afternoon starting from 12:30. 12:30 to 1:15 is the Kirtan, Arati and Kirtan. From 1:15 there is lecture. After the lecture again some Kirtan, then Prasad. After Prasad we chant some bhajans and verses from Gita. So it goes on up till 5 o'clock. So tomorrow we have a very special guest who has come all the way from Mayapur. He's a very senior devotee in our movement. Originally hails from Great Britain, but has been a brahmachari for 30 long years and one of the most loved and well-known devotees in our movement. Very humble, very kind, very knowledgeable, and he will be giving the class tomorrow morning, Srimad Bhagavatam, and also in the afternoon. So you are all invited to come and take the advantage of his association. And you can see for yourself how great saintly persons have actually originated in different parts of the world by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by the sincere efforts and pure devotion of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And you will see that if people born in other lands have taken to this path of bhakti with so much seriousness and made so much advancement, how much more seriously we should also take this path. So please do come tomorrow and take benefit. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Mahaprasade Govinde. Nama Brahmani Vaishnave. Svalpa Punyavatam Rajan. Vishvaso Naiva Jayate. Sharira Avidyajal. Jadendriya Tahekal. जीवे फेले विषय सागरे तार मध्ये जिवाति लोभमय सुदुर्मति ताके जेता कठिन संसारे कृष्ण बड़ा दयामय करि बार जिव जाय स्वप्रसादन्न दिलोभाय शैयन्ना मृतपाओ श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गुण गाओ प्रेमिडा को चैतन्य निताय जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Shri Shri Krishna Prasadam Ki Jai.